today on Enduring Word with David Guzik, pastor of Calvary Chapel, Santa Barbara.
Friends, this is not only true of us as people, but it's also true as creation, because creation itself was subjected to this futility until one day God brings its promised fulfillment. But at the same time, make no mistake about it, verse 13 tells us that it is a burdensome task. It isn't always easy to find these answers because of our pride, because of our self-reliance, and because our self-love, they all work against God's key to finding meaning in our life.
Looking around, it's easy to feel that life has no meaning. Many ask the question as they go about their lives, attempting to do or be something of consequence. King Solomon had the same struggle. In Ecclesiastes, we see that he wrestled with the meaninglessness of life and tried a lot of different activities to fill the emptiness he felt inside. Pastor David will be teaching about this struggle and how, whether we will admit it or not, we all are searching for answers to the same questions. Now, here's Pastor David with part two of his message, The Vanity of Life.
I think in our modern age, we're numbed to this. You know what's numbed us to this realization? I think in a lot of ways, technology. Technology gives the illusion of newness. Oh, wow, did you hear about this? I got something new. I got a new computer. I got a new phone. I got a new software program. I got a new social networking thingy. I got this new. Friends, has it really changed your life? Is life substantially different for you? No, it's a diversion. I think we do a better job than ever diverting our minds from the meaninglessness of life. It's as if we're hamsters on the rotating cage, right? And we've just told ourselves, man, if I run faster and faster, that's what's going to make me progress. But you go nowhere. The things you're so impressed with technologically today, you're going to think are lame in 2 years. You're not going to be able to believe that people have such things. And I think people are in the Stone Age. You ever watch those old movies from the 1980s and see the guy in the cell phone that's about as big as a shoebox? You look at those today and you laugh, right? You watch the movie from the 90s and the guy takes out a pager, right? You laugh, a pager? They used those back then? And then I'm trying to explain to my kids, you know, there was a time when I was growing up, people used phones that actually dialed. They can't believe it. It's like another world. Really, what does it really change in us? All it does is sort of give us a little injection of adrenaline just to sort of jolt us into thinking, wow, this is new, this is great. But it changes nothing. The same cycles appear. People still live, people still die. People still fall in love, people still split up. People work their jobs and people lose their jobs. People have pain and people have some joys. Does it change anything substantial in life? Not in Solomon's mind and not in our own either. It's very interesting when you take a look at this idea in the Old Testament. Creation sings God's praises, doesn't it? Creation is out there shouting unto the Lord. But the preacher says, take away God and take away his eternal government of all things, and the creation no longer reflects his glory. There was one commentator named Eaton. He says instead, it illustrates the weariness of mankind. Everything's just the same. Now, friends, we recognize this, don't we? He continues on now, verse 8. All things are full of labor. Man cannot express it. The eye is not satisfied with seeing, nor the ear filled with hearing. That which has been is what will be. That which is done is what will be done. And there's nothing new under the sun. Is there anything of which it may be said, see, this is new. It has already been in ancient times before us. There is no remembrance of former things, nor will there be any remembrance of things that are to come by those who will come after. Wow, as he begins it right there in verse 8, he begins with this startling idea, all things are full of labor, man cannot express it. You see, Solomon then observed that the meaningless of life, it's not only reflected in nature with the way that the sun always does the same thing and the moon always does the same thing and the rivers always do the same thing. No, it's not only in nature, but it's also evident in human effort and endeavor. Despite all of man's working, all of his labor, all of his seeing, all of his hearing, he's still not satisfied. Tell me, my friend, can you honestly tell me that you've never looked into your own soul when everything was good on the outside and seen the emptiness in your own soul? Have you never realized that there has to be something greater than yourself, greater than this temporal world? Well, Solomon understood it, and that's what he said. He said, it's still not satisfied. You tell me. Again, as Alexander McLaren observed, you tell me, what is the difference between that hamster in the cage going round and round and round and the man who lives his life working very hard for things that never he can attain and that will pass away as soon as he dies? There's not much difference, is there? And Solomon understands this. He says, that which has been is what will be. That which is done is what will be done, and there's nothing new under the sun. Despite all of man's work and progress, life seems monotonously the same. You don't think that's true? Listen to what are some of the most frequent words on the lips of young people and frequent words in the heart of modern man, not just young people, but older people as well. There's something within us, even with everything that we have, even with our old technology, and numb all of this, we still say it, do we not? I'm bored. Right? My friends, what possible reason do we have to be bored? I'll tell you why we're bored. Because God has put a void in our heart that can't be filled with the technological bells and whistles, that can't be filled with all the achievements and all the satisfaction of this world. God has put an empty place in our heart that can only be fulfilled, not just with Him, but with Him and who He is in eternity, with the eternal God reigning in our hearts. Things seem new, but they get old very quickly, so they could be said, there's nothing new under the sun. Oh, and you got that new computer, didn't you? Wow, you know, it was the new release. It was the new release from Apple, wasn't it? And you were the ones who first in line. But you're smart enough. You didn't even have to wait in line, man. You got it first. And there you are. Oh, man, it was just amazing, right? How soon did it take for it to seem old? There's nothing new under the sun. As it's been said, the more things change, the more they stay the same. Meet the new boss, same as the old boss, right? Or I like this, what Derek Kidner said. In their new guise, the old ways go on as a race we never learn. And if that's not bad enough, what he says at the end of this section, what he says in verse 11, that there is no remembrance of former things, nor will there be any remembrance of things that are to come. You see, the futility of life seems to work in both directions, both into the past and then into the future. Man works hard. He does the best that he can, yet it never seems to make a lasting difference, and all is simply forgotten. Can I just depress you a little bit further? It is shocking how soon people forget you. It just happens. Listen, nothing personal. It's just how life is. It's just as the writer to Ecclesiastes said. Well, Solomon throws all of this out, and he's not satisfied with it, right? He's taking a look at life and goes, this is meaningless. This is wrong. It's not the way we're meant to be. Listen, if this is the way we're meant to be, then there would be something in me satisfied with this emptiness. I'd look at the emptiness. I'd look at the sense of meaninglessness and boredom. I'd say, yeah, okay, good. That's the way it's supposed to be. But there's something deep inside you and me and Solomon and all of us that says, no, that's not the way it's supposed to be. It's supposed to be different than this. And Solomon felt it deep within his soul. So he said, you know what? I'm going to investigate. I'm going to search the matter out. I'm going to try to find the meaning of life under the sun. Now, please remember, in these opening chapters, all the way through, almost exclusively, there's a few sprinklings of hope, but not much. But all the way through these first 11 and a half chapters, Solomon is considering life under the sun. And I'll remind you again what that is. Under the sun doesn't mean without God, but it means without God that matters. It means a life that's impacted by God with a view towards eternity. It's a life that says, one day I'm going to have to stand before God and give account. So he's going to search the matter out. Maybe I can find some meaning to life under the sun. Verse 12. I, the preacher, was king over Israel in Jerusalem. And I set my heart to seek and search out by wisdom concerning all that is done under heaven. This burdensome task that God has given to the sons of men by which they may be exercised. I've seen all the works that are done under the sun, and indeed all is vanity and grasping for the wind. What is crooked cannot be made straight, and what is lacking cannot be numbered. When we begin there at verse 12, we see Solomon reintroducing himself, right? I, the preacher, was king over Israel in Jerusalem. Now, please remember, Solomon was internationally famous for his great wisdom. If the answers to the seemingly meaningless character of life could be found by wisdom, Solomon was the guy to find them. And Solomon's great wisdom was a gift of God. When God offered him whatever he pleased, he asked for wisdom, especially the wisdom to lead the people of God. That's in 1 Kings chapter 3. Therefore, God made Solomon so wise that he wrote thousands of proverbs, and he was considered to be the wisest man in his part of the world in his day. So this extremely wise man, super qualified to launch out on this investigation, to try to find the meaning of life, this is what he said he did. Verse 13, I set my heart to seek and search out by wisdom concerning all that is done under heaven. Having the unique ability to make this search, Solomon looked for the answers in wisdom, by which he meant human wisdom that excluded answers in light of eternity. Please understand, when he mentions in verse 13, by wisdom, he's not including wisdom that would have an eternal perspective. He's thinking of man's wisdom. Now, he was going to search it out the very best he could. When he says there in verse 13, I set my heart to seek and to search out. Those two words in the ancient Hebrew, they're not synonymous. The first one implies penetrating into the depth of an object. The other word has the idea of taking a comprehensive survey. He says, I'm going to search both in the particular and in the general. I'm going to search it out to try to find wisdom. But again, as I would remind you, this is the wisdom that does not take into account man's eternal responsibility. This is the wisdom of those who guide us to a better life in the here and now, how to live a healthier, happier, and more prosperous life. This is the wisdom of the self-help section in your local bookstore, right? Now listen, this wisdom certainly has value, and many lives would be better for following it, right? How many of us would be better if we took that just good everyday under the sun wisdom on how to manage our money better, on how to lose some weight, on how to learn another language, all those kind of things. We'd be better off for it. But listen, those will not answer the question of the meaninglessness of life. You see, if it excludes a true appreciation of eternity and our responsibilities in the world to come, this wisdom has no true answer to the meaninglessness of life. It only shows us how to live your meaningless life better. So congratulations. You now have a better meaningless life. And so he says, I set my heart, verse 13, to seek and to search out by wisdom concerning all that is done under heaven. And again, he's not thinking of God's heaven in eternity here. He's thinking of the blue sky and the starry sky. It's just another sort of poetic way of saying under the sun. He said, I did look at that. And then he says, under heaven, this is the burdensome task that God has given to the sons of man by which they may be exercised. Do you understand what verse 13 is telling us? It's telling us that this seemingly futility of life comes from God. He has given it to man. I'll read it to you again. Let's look at verse 13 one more time. I set my heart to seek and search out by wisdom concerning all that is done under heaven. This burdensome task God has given to the sons of man by which they may be exercised. You see, God has not only given you the sense that you lack meaning in your life, but he's also given you the sense that you can search it out if you'll search after it. God has deliberately built a system where life seems meaningless and vain without the understanding of a living, active God to whom we must give account. Now, friends, it might seem cruel of God to devise such a system, but actually it's evidence of his great love and mercy. Do you realize that God has built within you? He put it in you. God has built within you the desire and the need for that which is going to bring meaning and fulfillment in your life. He did that. He built you wanting it. He built you needing it. Just like Augustine wrote, he said that the Creator made a God-shaped space in each one of us that can only be filled with him, and our hearts are restless until they find their home in him. Now, friends, this is not only true of us as people, but it's also true as creation, because creation itself was subjected to this futility until one day God brings its promised fulfillment. But at the same time, make no mistake about it, verse 13 tells us that it is a burdensome task. It isn't always easy to find these answers because of our pride, because of our self-reliance, and because our self-love, they all work against God's key to finding meaning in our life. And in this depressed examination, Solomon says in verse 15, he looks around at the world and he says, what is crooked cannot be made straight, and what is lacking cannot be numbered. The preacher's initial search for answers in wisdom under the sun brought him only despair. You know, one of the tough things about the book of Ecclesiastes is the preacher's just a little bit too honest for us, isn't he? He's very quick to tell us the results. I looked around, I did all this searching, and you know what? Nothing. Zero. Here's the results of my exhaustive search to try to find meaning and fulfillment in this world under the sun. Here's my results. Ready? What is crooked cannot be made straight, and what is lacking cannot be numbered. What's wrong can never be set right, and the things that are wrong are so great that they can't be numbered. But then, verse 16, Solomon sort of rallies himself. He says, wait a minute. I got to try again. I got to try more, right? There's got to be a solution to this problem. So he looks for it right here, verse 16. I communed with my heart, saying, look, I've attained greatness, and I've gained more wisdom than all who were before me in Jerusalem. My heart has understood great wisdom and knowledge. And I set my heart to know wisdom and to know madness and folly, and I perceive that this is also grasping for the wind. For in much wisdom is much grief, and he who increases knowledge increases sorrow. By the way, it's very interesting how he begins verse 16, isn't it? I communed with my heart. This is natural for anyone who looks for the answers under the sun, apart from an eternal perspective. They look inward for wisdom and answers instead of the God who rules eternity. Friends, if you commune with your heart and look for the answers, which, by the way, is the majority way of finding the answers for life in the world today, how are most people guided? How do you look for the rules of your life? How will you decide what's right and what's wrong? What do they say? They say, well, I just look within. I look to my own heart. I look for my own wisdom. I let my own self be my guide, whatever. Well, friends, that's vanity. That's grasping after the wind. How much better to have this eternal perspective that Solomon would eventually come to. He says there very plainly in verse 17, and I set my heart to know wisdom and to know madness and folly, I perceive that this is also grasping for the wind. It's like, okay, listen, the first time I did this great wisdom for search, nothing came out. I found that everything that's crooked can't be made straight, and what's lacking can't be numbered. I got to look again. I got to search harder. And what did he say? No, it's also grasping for the wind. The solutions to his life, it wasn't to think harder. It wasn't to think better. That also was all grasping for the wind. Why? Because he says in verse 18, "For in much wisdom is much grief, and he who increases knowledge increases sorrow." The more the preacher understood life under the sun, the greater his despair. The more he learned, the more he realized he didn't know, and the more he knew, the more he knew life's sorrows. Friends, if you're going to restrict life to under the sun without an eternal perspective, you're stuck in the same place. The very best you can find is how to live a better, meaningless life. Now, I want to draw your minds in conclusion, because we're going to have to end off here and begin with chapter 2 the next time. What he says in verse 9, "That which has been is what will be, that which is done is what will be done, and there's nothing new under the sun." Friends, here's the good news that I have to give you. There is something new in Jesus Christ our Lord. Solomon is writing from a very important perspective that we need to enter into even more deeply in the coming weeks than we've entered into tonight. There may be nothing new under the sun, but thankfully the followers of Jesus, those who are born again by God's Spirit, they don't live under the sun in that sense. Their life is filled with new things. You want to know that you can have new in Jesus Christ? I'll just name off a few. You can have a new name. You can have a new community. You can have a new commandment. You can have a new covenant. You can have a new and living way to heaven. You can have a new purity. You can have a new nature. You can be a new creation in Jesus Christ. And as it says in 2 Corinthians 5:17 and Revelation 21:5, all things become new. You see, Solomon's just setting us up for what the answer should be. And friends, the answer is to find the newness of life in Jesus Christ. Solomon is not going to let us off so easy. He sort of demands, if I could say this, to destroy any illusion of hope that we have apart from God. But fortunately, in Jesus Christ, we have great hope and great newness of life. You know, before Jesus was crucified, he held out before his disciples saying, and he said, "I'm making the new covenant in my blood." He makes all things new for his people. Friends, if this first chapter of Ecclesiastes has hit a little close to home for you, and you seem to be experiencing more of that meaninglessness of life than the meaningful life that Jesus Christ wants to give you, tonight's the night for you to come before God and ask him, "Lord, make things new. I understand that true newness can't be mine apart from the eternal, apart from who Jesus is and what he did on my behalf." That's where newness is. Listen, you've been trying to find something new, but by having a new job, but by having a new romance, but by having a new toy in your life, but by having a new place that you visit. But all that's getting old, isn't it? What you need is the newness that Jesus Christ brings into your life. And then you'll find with him making all things new in your life, you can enjoy some of those things because you're not looking to them for ultimate fulfillment anymore. He brings the meaning to our lives.
For many of us, studying the Bible is a part of our everyday lives. There seems to always be those sections of Scripture that are difficult to understand. What did Jesus really mean when he said, "And if your eye causes you to sin, pluck it out and cast it from you"? Was Jesus literally telling us to disfigure our bodies? Of course not. We know that's not true. So what does it mean? This is where God has used men like Pastor David Guzik in the writing of commentaries. Pastor David has written numerous commentaries throughout the Bible, In fact, you can find commentary on the entire New Testament and most of the Old Testament at enduringword.com. These commentaries are available digitally at the website and even in mobile format. Concise thoughts about the history, context, and author make these commentaries a valuable resource as you seek to know Jesus more. We encourage you to log on to enduringword.com and select the book and chapter you're currently studying. Or you can purchase a copy of Pastor David's commentary for your Kindle or even a printed copy. Simply log on to enduringword.com and select books from the main menu. Another great option from Pastor David is his book, Standing in Grace. This book details the fact that those who belong to him are not only saved by grace, they stand in grace. Again, for all these wonderful resources and more, log on to enduringword.com. Well, that concludes our time together today. Please place a marker in your Bibles and make plans to join us again for the next edition of Enduring Word Radio.